And welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. I'm your host, Chip Lorre. Let's talk connectivity, all right? Bring in FCC Commissioner Brendan Carr to the conversation. Commissioner Carr, thank you so much for making time to be with us on AgriTalk.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Okay, Commissioner Carr, we continuously hear about the disadvantages of being in a business out in rural America because of the slow connectivity out there. How big is that disadvantage in rural America as you guys see it?
It's a real challenge. I mean, look, if you look at New York or San Francisco, these are communities that almost no matter what we do at the federal level, they're going to get next-generation broadband, they're going to get next-generation connectivity. But we have work to do to make sure that every single community, including in rural America, gets their fair shot. Part of that is through redirecting a $10 billion fund that we have that can help support broadband in these rural areas. Another big piece of it is cutting the red tape that only makes it harder to get broadband to these communities.
Yeah, and it is a difficult task. There's no question about it, just because of the cost and the space that we're talking about. But what technologies do you think hold the biggest promise here? I mean, out in at my place, my home place, I'm lucky enough to be working with a small town utilities company that just ran fiber to my house. That's a wonderful piece of technology in my house. But is it going to be fiber? Is it 5G? Is it satellite? What holds the most promise?
Yeah, your point about cost is true. It costs about $30,000 per mile to deploy fiber in some cases. When you think about the sparse populations, you know, one person per square mile, less in some places, that's a long time to recover that investment, so it's difficult. Fiber is going to be the key and be the solution in a lot of places, but in other areas, we're going to see a mix of technologies. There's some new generations of satellite technologies that we're hoping are going to be better and faster than prior generations. That'll help some. There's new, what we call fixed wireless. There's a lot of small mom-and-pop providers that are literally putting antennas on the top of water towers. I was actually on one 2 weeks ago up in Parker, South Dakota, and they shoot these high-speed wireless beams to farms within a surrounding 9- or 10-mile area. And then you talk about 5G. So 5G is going to be this next generation of wireless connectivity. A lot of places have 3G and 4G today, and 5G is going to be much faster, higher speeds. So I think consumers are going to benefit a lot in the coming years from the introduction of this mix of different technologies.
Yeah, you said it right there, Commissioner Carr, in the coming years. How long will this take?
Well, when you look at 5G in particular, that technology is being rolled out now, and in 2020 is a number that a lot of people use. But, you know, right now there are deployments going on every single day that are bringing fiber and fixed wireless to more farms and ranches and rural communities. I was in Milford, Nebraska about a week ago, and I went to a feedlot there. There's this great little startup out of Lincoln, Nebraska, that's making essentially Fitbit for cattle. It's this little connected device that goes on the cattle's ear, and it helps the pen riders really identify those cows that might be ailing or not quite moving in the same way as other cattle. Yep. Things that are subtle that are difficult even for an experienced pen rider to see, and these tags are picking it up, and that's, you know, able to target treatments and really reduce the issues that we see in that feedlot life cycle.
Yeah, and when you talk about the number of cattle that are in a feedlot, you gotta have a pretty good bandwidth to be able to handle all that data coming in.
Yeah, that's right. You know, a lot of people, when they think about smart ag and precision ag, they think about sort of low bandwidth applications, perhaps even a GPS-controlled tractor that can drive in a straight line. We were in Moline, Michigan a couple weeks ago, met with a young person named Jason who operates the farm, and his job essentially now is to collect silos worth of data, massive amounts of data from the connected combines to drone-based imagery to historic soil samples. And here's the challenge. It's one thing to get all that data, and we heard stories about farmers who have old coffee mugs full of these USB drives with data. The challenge is, how do you get that data online and connect it to a cloud computing system that can really crunch it and then send the prescriptions back And that's when you see a tremendous boost in productivity out there. So that's why getting that high-speed connection is important. Jason's particular example, he was lucky. There was a railroad track that ran right by his property, and with the investment of about $50,000, unfortunately, but he had the capacity to do it, he could connect into that fiber line. So we see success stories like that, such as they are, where they get high-speed connections, and we see ones of farms and communities that are still on the other side of the digital divide. And we're working right now to just get more broadband out there.
Yeah. Okay, well, the government is not an internet service provider, so how are you going to do that? How are you going to get it out there?
Yeah, there's a couple ways. One, I mentioned we have this $10 billion a year fund called the Universal Service Program that we administer at the FCC. And right now we're reorienting that fund and we're opening it up again to support deployments in these areas where the private sector case is just not there. Those areas where it costs $30,000 to deploy a mile of fiber, you can get a substantial percentage of that supported through that $10 billion fund. The other piece is regulatory reform. So in March, for example, of this year, we looked at what are known as small cells. You know, a lot of people think of their cell phone about these 100-foot, 200-foot towers, but for 5G, almost all of those new deployments are going to be backpack-size small cells. Well, our regulatory approach at the federal level assumed that every new antenna is a 200-foot tower. So there's a lot of cost and process that went through it.
Okay.
What we did in March is we excluded small cells from that federal review process entirely, which alone is expected to cut 30% out of the total cost of deployment. So through funding in those areas where it's uneconomic for the private sector to do, that helps. But then cutting significant red tape that was driving up the cost, that's something that can flip the business case for thousands of communities and put them from unprofitable to profitable for the private sector to bring broadband in.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, a couple of things here. We were talking about data management at the farm level. Well, we need to know exactly what we're working with as far as broadband accessibility goes across the country right now. How confident are you that we know where there are real issues?
You know, we're working on that exact issue right now. We're in the process of reestablishing what's known as a national broadband map, where we have all the broadband providers put their information into this one centralized location, and then we can look at it and see, you know, drill down to a, you know, city level or look up at a national level as to where we are with deployment. So we have a pretty good sense. You know, look, there's going to be some play in the joints whenever you try to put a national map of broadband together, but we're working on doing exactly that.
Okay, good, good. You talked about some of the advancements that have been made at the farm level. Let's broaden that out just a little bit and talk about some of the rural communities out there. Have you got any examples of how smaller rural communities have been able to use quicker, stronger access to the internet to grow?
Yeah, it's a game changer. So when we travel around, we meet, you know, with real estate agents, for example, and they tell us, you know, the percentage increase in home values when a community gets broadband versus when it doesn't. You know, we hear about communities where people just aren't even looking to move to where they lack broadband. And you step back more broadly, you know, we talk about, you know, this trend of a lot of people feeling like they have to get up, move from their hometowns to a big city for opportunity. When you get broadband to those communities, that can flip the case entirely. I was in Three Rivers Township, Indiana, a couple weeks ago with Senator Todd Young, and went to a family farm, the Moog family farm. There was a sat down at the kitchen table with the Linda Moog, she's a grandmother now, and she talked about her son, who left to go to Purdue to get an advanced degree in cattle nutrition, essentially. Mm-hmm. And instead of having to move away or go to a big city to launch that high-tech career, he does it from the farm because they have a new broadband connection. So he goes online, and he can monitor herds from as far away as Costa Rica and pull the massive amount of data on them, and he can run that operation from the farm while pitching in there as well. So it makes a big difference from an economic perspective, but that's an example of where it, you know, keeps a family together and allows someone to stay at home and pursue their business.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. Okay, you also mentioned regulatory reforms. We've got a big one right now is the rolling back of the net neutrality. Does that work into the expansion of broadband across the country?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we saw in 2015 when the Obama-era FCC put those Title II net neutrality rules in place for the first time, we saw a pullback in investment by broadband providers across the country. And the ones that were hit the worst were those small mom and pops that most people never heard of that are trying to bring broadband for the first time to these communities. We saw evidence that AT&T and Verizon and Comcast, there was a pullback at an aggregate level from them. But the fact of the matter is they have armies of regulatory lawyers to work through that new Title II regime. But it was the smaller providers that are trying to compete with them, most of the time in rural areas, that didn't have the lawyers. And they wrote us under penalty of perjury saying they were pulling back on investments because of it. Yeah. And now that we've rolled it back, we're hearing from providers. There's a VTEL, a provider in Vermont, that just wrote a letter saying they're now, you know, more confident than ever, and they're reinvesting millions of dollars based on this new environment.
Okay, we've only got a minute left, but I got to ask this question. Speed is absolutely critical to the futures industries. Some of the things that trading houses have done to gain even a fraction of a second to get an advantage, does this rollback of net neutrality, does that mean that speed is now for sale?
So from a consumer's perspective, rolling back these rules doesn't change the law with respect to a lot of that conduct that you hear people that are concerned about. Consumers are still going to get, you know, better, faster, and hopefully cheaper going forward broadband options.
Okay. All right. Very good. Well, this is all exciting stuff, Commissioner Carr, because I've seen how improved access and connectivity can improve a community. So thank you very much and keep up the good work.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. That's Commissioner Carr from the FCC.